Hey everyone, super excited to bring you the first podcast. This podcast is basically designed to give an insight from college coaches about what they're looking for in their players and how to get committed, and also just talk about, you know, current state of affairs of hockey. And yeah, hopefully that you take a lot of value from this. And as always, you know, what can you add to your game whenever you're listening to any of these interviews or any of these little sound bites? You know, what can you add to your game and how can you become better just by, you know, implementing these things when you get back to the rink? This first interview here with Taylor, you know, we are very fortunate to have Taylor Wazzo from Suffolk University. Prior to her time in the coaching world, she was a very well-respected player and still is in many ways. So we're very fortunate here, and she has a wealth of knowledge she's prepared to share. And the interview went really well, and I think a lot of people will take a lot from it. We've got a few more lined up coming soon, so have a listen to this one, see what you think, and again, add these things to your game. I don't know how to start this, but I'll just start it anyway. So we're joined today by Taylor Wazzilk. She's the head coach of Suffolk University right now in her second year. Previous to that, she played at BC. She also represented the USA national team and played prep school before that. So the start of this podcast and what we're going to do with the series is kind of talk more to coaches and what they look for in players and why they look for it, and get a bit more in depth about their own program and, you know, what their philosophy is as a coach and what they see in terms of the women's game. And just kind of, again, just ask some questions, give some players some feedback, give some insight into it all. And yeah, so we're super, you know, Taylor, like, let's see how this goes. Like,
let's do it.
So you know, first of all, Taylor, like, just introduce yourself to everyone, you know, what you're about, and you know, your background in hockey, how you started, where you grew up, you know, your time at BC maybe, and kind of give everyone a bit of a background on that.
Yeah, for sure. So my name's Taylor Wazzilk. Like Sam said, I am from Port Huron, Michigan. I grew up playing boys hockey for the most part. You know, there's a ton of girls teams now. Back then there wasn't. So I was playing local boys hockey until high school. When high school hit, I moved to girls hockey in Detroit. So played Honeybaked for 2 years, Little Caesars for 2 years. During that time, made the U18 team twice. I was trying to remember, sorry. Junior year of high school, we went to Füssen, Germany and played in the World Championships, and we won gold, which was awesome, versus Canada. Senior year of high school, we hosted the U18 Championships in Chicago. We lost in overtime, which kind of stunk, but great experience. You know, I was really lucky to get that experience during high school before even going off to college. So then senior year hit, I did all my visits. It was crazy. I was crazy stressed for a couple of months figuring everything out. Did my official visits, decided on Boston College. I love Boston. It was always going to be a school in that city. I never knew which one it would be, but I knew it would be in Boston. So went to BC 4 years, a little bit of stuff with the national team freshman, sophomore year, made the team for the World Championships my sophomore year. Freshman year went to tryouts, didn't make it. Sophomore year got invited to tryouts, made the team. We had the World Championships in Burlington, Vermont that year, which we also lost in overtime, but again, great experience, absolutely loved it. Post BC, wasn't sure what I wanted to do. I kind of took the summer to live life as like a normal kid for once. I think I was always hockey over the summer, so after graduation I just took a summer and had some fun. I was a tourist in Boston. I just lived in the city for a few months and had a blast. And in the fall, as hockey season was starting to roll around, I got an offer to coach at UMass Boston with another BC graduate. And it kind of took off from there. So I did a year at UMass, 2 years at SUNY Canton in New York, both D3 schools as assistant coaches. And then I started at Suffolk in the spring of 2017 as the first head coach at Suffolk, and it's kind of been a roller coaster from there.
Yeah, no, it's like definitely, like, we've known each other now the last nearly a year, I guess.
Yeah,
and it's been super successful to see, and exciting to see what you've done with your program just this year alone. But yeah, going back to that, so like, talk about the official visits, and hockey's obviously changed. There's more opportunities now for players, and there's obviously a bigger increase in demand for places, maybe in some ways. Yep. But talk about, like, you know, how did it work back then? Is there any similarities to today? Mm-hmm. And, you know, what was that process for you as a player? And has that process changed now that you're a coach?
Yeah, I think it's a bit different, to be honest. I remember, you know, I committed very, very late for a D1 spot. I committed after I had done my official visit senior year, mainly because I had no one telling me junior year that I need to start narrowing things down, that I need to go see schools. I was just going with the flow, being a normal kid, going to practice. You know, and then senior year, I did three official visits. You're allowed to do five. I only took three. I had a pretty good idea of what I was interested in. So I visited Cornell, Harvard, and BC, and then I decided on BC probably late November, Thanksgiving time, I would probably say. You know, everyone asked me, like, what were you doing? Why was it taking so long? I honestly have no clue. Like, I don't remember sitting down and, like, going through pros and cons or anything like that. It was just, at the time, it wasn't, you know, spots weren't filling nearly as quickly. Yes, schools were waiting on me to make a decision, but I didn't feel the crazy stress, I guess, that kids feel now. I know it's pretty normal for Division One spots to be filled. Junior year, I think, is, like, the latest now. People are committing freshman, sophomore year. I know there's new rules. I won't speak to those. I don't know the fine print on all those, but, you know, I know it's pretty early. I know it's a little crazy. I think I was lucky in a sense that it wasn't nearly as cutthroat when I was in high school. You know, we had time to kind of do our visits to figure everything out, whereas now they're doing their official visits to one school because they've been committed to that school for 2 years. So, you know, as a player, I think it's changed a lot in a sense that, you know, the scholarship spots fill up, and I think it's definitely a clear image that the game is growing. You know, there's a lot less spots because there's a lot more really good players. Even being a Division III coach, we get kids that are, you know, that D1, D3 bubble kid is what we look for when recruiting top players. And there's so many of them, and there's so many who could go D1, who want to go D1, but there's just not the spots for them because everyone is so good now. It's crazy, especially with the new league starting with the NEWHA and, yeah. You know, LIU and St. A's and all those teams are going full-blown D1 now. So there's a couple more teams, but it still feels like there's hardly any spots. There's so many kids, like, right on that edge of that D1, D3 bubble that we call it. But as a coach, you know, it's not something I pay a ton of attention to. You know, I go out and I look for the best kids, obviously, whether they're talking to D1s or D3s or whatever it is. You know, I kind of specifically look for the kids that I want in my program. I don't really care who else they're talking to or, you know, what their offers are. That really doesn't determine where they fit on my chart or determine if I'm interested in them or anything like that. It's, you know, what are they going to come in and how do they fit into my program, if that kind of makes sense.
Yeah, no, definitely. And then in terms of when you were getting recruited back in the day, were you the one reaching out to the schools or the schools reaching out to you? Like, how was that kind of happening? And then is that the same thing happening now for players? Are players more reaching out to coaches now? Like, how are you looking at it? There's two different questions there, right? I think a lot of it,
yeah,
I think a lot of players, and they're asking me what they email, how they send it, you know, coaches, there's tons of exposure, quote unquote, opportunities now, and there's tons of camps and clinics, but I think a lot of players are kind of lost. So explain, like, how you did it back in the day and if there's any similarities. And my belief as well is, like, if you're good enough, they'll find you, regardless where you're.
Yeah, 100%. I agree with that. I think especially now with, you know, people like you doing summer camps and summer clinics and stuff like this, and, you know, there's online recruiting services, there's Neutral Zone, there's NCSA, you know, if you are good, they will find you. I believe that too. I was definitely a shy, quiet kid, so I was not reaching out to anybody. I can honestly say that. Like, if my coach grabbed me after a game and was like, there's a coach waiting for you, I was crap in my pants. I was so nervous to talk to them. So for me, it was a little bit different. I think kids are much more mature now than I was. I think they're much more outgoing. I'm a Division III coach. I get a ton of emails every week. You know what I mean? Not nearly as many as a D1 coach, of course, but I think it works both ways. You know, I think at D3, we have a lot less rules for contact. So I can pick up my phone and text a kid right now or email a kid right now expressing my interest, as long as they're, like, past freshman year, I think the rule is. So, you know, we have a lot more flexibility, a lot more means of communication, whereas at D1, you know, they have certain rules on when they can email, how they can email, can they call, can they text. You know, I'm pretty sure they can only call once a week. I think that's still the rule. Don't quote me on that, but so it's just very different. You know, I think the kids got to take a little bit of initiative. You know, they got to have a nice email typed up. you know, my advice for that is definitely don't make a generic email. Don't send it out to 100 coaches and just say, dear coach. You know, if I'm getting an email, I want it to say, you know, hey, Coach Taylor, I really love the psych program at Suffolk. You know, I'm really interested in the location. You know, something that makes me think they actually know what my school is about, instead of just a generic, like, I think I can come in and score a lot of goals for you. And, you know, if they're not saying anything specifically about me or the school or my team, then, you know, I know that it's kind of just a blanket email they're sending to everyone. And I might, you know, file it away in a folder and come back to it later. But, you know, I've also gotten great emails from kids that are like, hey, Coach Taylor, like, they're so specific that I'm like, wow, they looked up everything. They're on it. You know, they're like, I love that you played in Boston. Like, I want to play in Boston. Like, the law school is awesome. You know, something like that to make me very, you know, make it very obvious to me that they did their research, that they're genuinely interested, and not just emailing 100 coaches at once, which I think is where we lose a few kids, is that, you know, they're sending the emails, which is a really good start. But now it's like, only send them to schools that you're interested in, is kind of my best advice. Yeah.
Yeah, no, definitely. When I'm talking to players, especially in our program, I'm always asking them, you know, where they envision themselves being for 4 years, right? If they're a city person like myself, you know, you don't want to be going to Potsdam, right? Or Clarkson, where you're up there and it's cold and everything else. If you're a homebody, I wouldn't advise moving 2,000 miles away from home.
Right.
Just kind of know who you are as a person and know where it's about. And then I look at it and go like, all right, how would I pre-scout a team? Right. Whenever I'm talking to them, it's like, how are you going to pre-scout this team? And a lot of players probably don't do this anymore because they're playing so many games. Mm-hmm. But looking at like, all right, who's the best player on that team if you were going to look at that? But then flip it on the switch. So like, if you're talking about your program, then yeah, of course, research Taylor, research what she's about, research the assistant coach, and understand and be like, and have an insight as well where you'd fit in there. You know, if you're looking at their team and they like to play very quickly, get the puck from their own defensive zone and go straight north, and you're more of a puck controlling defenseman, maybe that's not the philosophy or that's the system that they're going to fit into. So understand that side of thing, and then be upfront and be honest about it as you are as a player, because those kind of things I think are so, you know, are really important. That's going to show the interest to you guys. So yeah, I think, so let's go a little bit, moving on a little bit. So like right now, I know you're still playing this year, right? So talk a bit about that.
So I wasn't playing, and I'm playing this year. I played the past 2 years. 2 years ago, I played with the Boston Blades in the CWHL. Or I guess that was 3 years ago now. Boston Blades in the CWHL for 1 year. So that was the year I was recruiting for Suffolk, so I didn't have a team. So, you know, my Friday, Saturday nights were open. I was allowed to play, and my schedule was pretty clear. And then last year, our first year as a team, I played with the Boston Pride of the NWHL. You know, it got to be a little overwhelming. It got to be a little crazy. So I actually ended up leaving the team mid-season at New Year's time, just because, you know, my focus is Suffolk and it's my passion. It's what I love is these kids and coaching these kids. So, and then this year they were running low. They had a lot of injuries. They asked me to play for a few weekends. I kind of said, what the hell, I'll do it. It's fun.
Yeah, you got a few points as well.
Pardon?
You got a few points as well.
Like, yeah, 4 points, 4 games, but most importantly, 4 penalties. Very proud of that, of course. My very first game, the Pride are 16-0 or 15-0, and I got a penalty in overtime, and I was like, oh my gosh, I am in the box. I am not even on this team. Like, if we get scored on right now, these kids are going to hate me. Luckily, we had a sick PK, and I got out of the box and got myself right to the bench as fast as possible, but it was awesome. No, it was wicked fun. I didn't know a lot of those people, and the girls that I did know on that team, I've never played with before. My roommate is goalie on that team, so it was cool to play in a game with her. I'll probably never get that opportunity again, but yeah, it was a little crazy. You know, I think just with the PWHPA and NWHL, and, you know, everything was a little crazy. It wasn't, you know, I 100% support everybody, every player. I don't really care about leagues. I think the players are great. The national players are great. I believe in, you know, everything that everyone's doing. For me, it was just personal choice. You know, it was a fun 2 weekends of games, just go out with friends and, you know, meet some new people and play. I hadn't put my gear on in the full year. I went out for warm-ups, our first game, and my coach was like, when's the last time you skated? And I was like, when was the last practice I was at last season? He was like, oh my God. But I wasn't exactly cruising the first game. It took me a little bit to get going, but fun experience. You know, it was a personal choice to play. It was fun for 2 weekends, but I don't envision doing that again. I think it's too busy with recruiting. We have too many events to get to. Right now, obviously not with, being stuck at home and all this, but once things get back to normal, hopefully in the next few months, it's crazy busy in the fall with, different sports and, I'm doing my master's at Suffolk too. So now I have class and homework to battle. And, I got 25 of my own kids to worry about on campus once September rolls around. So it's all a bit crazy.
Yeah, so like just quickly before you jump back into Suffolk and everything else, where do you see like the women's game going from your standpoint? Obviously, I'm working with players here from, as young as U8s on the ice sometimes.
Yeah.
And it's fantastic where we have like 35 U8s who are like 5 to 8 years old. And that goes up to we have over 200 girls. And a lot of them are, 2007s moving into Bantams this year. And the future for them is, where's professional hockey for them going to be in 10 years' time when they graduate college? Do you think that, what's your viewpoint on those things? And where do you think that, what's going to happen and what needs to be done for things to happen and move ahead? So when your players as well, when they graduate, they can still keep playing or being involved in hockey.
Yeah, I have no clue, to be honest. I know there's a lot going on right now. There's the NWHL and the people that support that, and the players that play in that league are obviously great. A lot of D1 players, some D3 players. 100% love all those people, think they're doing a great job. But then, I love the PWHPA too. My roommate Amanda Pelkey is an Olympian who plays in that. My best friend Haley Scarupa plays in that. So I'm kind of in the middle. I don't want to hurt any feelings with this, but I think they're both great. I think, everybody's playing, which is awesome. They all get to play right now. I can't be upset about that. I know there's a lot of discussion on, which league is better and what's going on and, where I would like to see the game go. I just love the fact that everyone can play. I kind of recruit based on the fact that, I tell kids, this is kind of the end of the line for you, coming to Suffolk, playing D3, unless you're going to Europe, you're not probably going to play professionally. It's just kind of the nature of the beast. So I try to get kids who kind of understand that and buy into that and who are ready to lay it all on the line for 4 years. Obviously, if those kids can play after college, I'd be pumped. I'd be thrilled, whether that's Europe, whether that's NWHL, whether that's, some new league that forms. I think it's all very up in the air right now. I wish I knew what was going on. I don't understand half of it, to be honest with you. But, if there's a platform for everybody to play, whether it's, national team players, D1, D3, whatever it is, I think if everyone gets the chance to play who wants to play, I think it's pretty cool. So.
Yeah, perfect. So so we'll jump back into Suffolk, right? And I think what's really interesting about, most colleges are kind of confined with what they can do and how they can run practices and the amount of hours they can have contact with. But, whenever I talk to you, Taylor, it's all about, not really how good the player is in a day one on campus, but you're looking at how good that player can be the day they leave campus, right? You're looking at their growth, where a lot of programs are trying to take the best players at the current time. You're looking at players that have the ability to grow with you and grow with the program and develop as a hockey player. So, talk about, what's the number one thing that you look for in a player? When you're talking to them, they may have the skill, they may be top point scorer, but what are some things that you rule out whenever you're talking to them? Or what's something that you look for from their coaches? Or just again, what are the three kind of takeaways that you look for in a player?
I think my vision of what I want has changed over the past few years. Starting at Suffolk in the spring of 2017, we had zero players, no club team, no JV team, anything like that, starting from scratch. So naturally, I was looking for talent. And I talked to coaches and made sure they were good kids and stuff like that too. But, I wanted talent. I wanted to compete right out of the gate year one, and we did a really good job with that. Now that I'm 2 years in, going on season three here, I think that's changed a little bit in a sense that, of course, we're looking for talented players, but we're also looking for depth. We're looking for people who, for me, it's who just want it and who love to be here and love the sport. One thing I found with recruiting is there's so many players out there who are talented, but who don't love the sport. And it's so bizarre to me that they don't watch the NHL or the, the NWHL. They don't watch hockey. They don't engage in it. They're just good at it, which is, it's mind blowing to me. But, so I kind of have no interest in those kids now. And it sounds a little bit harsh, but, the way you win and the way you build championship teams is having you know, 20, 25 players who are all there, who are bought in, you know, regardless of their role, who are supportive, who want to get better is a huge thing. I've had, you know, in my coaching career, players that had no interest in getting better. They didn't care about development. They just wanted to play every single minute of every game. You know, whether it's a goalie who's not getting the ice time she wants or a player, you know, I've had so many kids over the past 5 years of coaching that, you know, they want to be there, they want to play, and, you know, they don't understand by being on the bench and watching, they're getting a little bit better, and, you know, by having to work for their spot and having someone who, you know, if it's a goalie and they're the second goalie and, you know, they have a first goalie who's stealing games from them, they're getting better by that girl stealing games from them. And, you know, some kids don't get that. Some kids don't care about getting better. They just want to be in the net, and that's really frustrating for me. So what I'm looking for specifically with this year, you know, I've been home the past few weeks working from home, so it's been all calls and emails with coaches. One, just making sure these are good kids, right? These are good people. These are kids I don't have to worry about flunking out year two. They're good teammates. They're supportive. They're consistent. But above all, you know, talking to the kid, I can usually tell, you know, how much they love the sport, how passionate they are just by a phone call. And it might sound a little odd, you know, it's a phone call. I'm not looking at them. It's a little bit of a weird way to judge things. But, you know, you can tell the kids that are excited about your school, that are excited about the sport and the opportunity. And, you know, every kid is looking for something different. And I think with us, too, every year I need something different. You know, this year we needed X amount of players. We needed two top line kids and two, you know, role players. And next year's class will be different. So it kind of changes year to year, person to person. You know, and it goes along with what we're graduating, what we're losing. We're luckily a young team, so we're not graduating anyone until next year. But, you know, what I look for is, you know, the staples, the things that are consistent every year is obviously work ethic, attitude, you know, a nod from their coach that they're a good kid who I'm not going to have any issues with. You know, just to kind of go off that, one thing we started this year with our team was three expectations for them. So we just talked about being good students, good people, and good athletes. So, you know, there's a million different things that go into that. With good students, obviously, you know, they're going to class, they're attending class, they're not skipping, they're getting good grades, they're going to study hall. Good athletes is, it's not just practice, it's not just production during games, it's doing the extra stuff. It's getting early to workouts, you know, staying late roll, it's ice bathing on your days off, kind of, you know, going the extra mile in terms of being a collegiate athlete, an elite athlete is kind of what we push for. And then good people, that's, you know, doing the right things, representing our program off the ice, that's being a good teammate, that's being a good, you know, just a good kid in general, a good part of our community, whether it's the athletic community or the Suffolk community at whole. Just kind of, those are the three things that we adopted this year as a team and that I'm looking to definitely use with recruiting and carry into the next few years. That was a really long answer for you.
No, that's good. That's good. Yeah. I think people will definitely take a lot of value from that and understand especially what you're looking for in players. And it's not necessarily the skill set is what you talk about, right? You're talking about tangible things that not people see on the surface, but what people can hold and they can kind of channel that themselves. But, you know, I think a large thing as well is on the female side, from what I see, is on the boys' side, whenever I'm coaching boys and I tell them, hey, all right, now we're like 14, 15 years old and you want to kind of, your pathway looks like either prep school and then onto juniors or play some level of AAA, then you move on to juniors, you're in juniors for maybe 2 years. I got a player right now in the USHL. He decommitted himself from a team and now he's trying to recommit to another team for next year, but he's still 19 years old, right? He's 2001. Yeah. He hasn't got a college spot. So it's a different pathway, but whenever I talk to him about, you know, what do you need to do off the ice? And obviously on the ice here, we can make players faster through technique or say they're a better skater, we can make it more efficient. But everyone knows it would be faster or have a harder shot, you just got to be strong. So what are you looking for, like, in your athletes? Like, you talk about athletes, not hockey players. Mm-hmm. So, you know, how do you look for the things that, you know, that drive, even though they're not on the ice now? And I think a lot of players who aren't at the rink don't regard themselves as hockey players. I always say you're a hockey player every single day, not just on the days that you play hockey. So what are you looking for? And then what do you ask of your players as well? And is there a strength and conditioning kind of component to it? And do you think that's lacking in the girl side? And what can be done? What myths can kind of be dispelled as well?
What I look for with my team, you know, we started the year with a lot of, you know, if we're having an off day, it's a mandatory cold tub, get to our athletic building, stretch, roll, see the trainer if you need to. You know, what I like is going down to the training room, going down to the, you know, the hydrotherapy room and seeing who's in there when it's not mandatory. You know, we have a core group of kids that every team does. I'm sure that, you know, if it's an off day or if they have an hour between classes, they're always in Ridgeway. That's our athletic building, my apologies. But, you know, they're always there. They're on the game ready. They're in the cold tub. They're stretching. They're doing an extra mobility workout, something like that. And those are my favorite kids. You know, you're not supposed to have favorites, but the kids who work hardest are the ones that you love, whether they're, you know, the first liners, the fourth liners, the third, fourth goalie, whatever it is. You know, those are kind of always the kids that I enjoy coaching because I don't need to motivate them. It's very hard for me to, as a coach, as someone who played, you know, like you said, we can make their shot harder. We can teach them to have better stick handling and better shot selection. But, you know, I can't make them want it more. I can't make them love the game more. That's not my job. You know, to an extent, maybe it is, but I don't want the kids that I have to teach that stuff to. You know, I want the kids that are passionate, that want to be there. You know, I had a recruiting call on Monday, and one of the girls I talked to asked like six different questions about the weight room, about the weight program, about, you know, who runs strength and conditioning, like all that stuff. And to me, that was awesome because I was like, this kid loves it. She loves working out. She's not just a hockey player. She's an athlete. You know, she loves being in the gym. She's got a ball at home. She's stick handling all the time. You know, just all that different stuff she was telling me. So from the recruiting side of it, and some kids are very passionate about lifting, but they don't think to bring it up on recruiting visits. And that's fine. But, you know, for a kid like that, who it's just so obvious for, it's huge. You know, I was drawn to that kid right away. I'm like, wow, she sounds like she loves it. You know, she's not going to complain if we have morning lifts on Monday mornings. You know, if we're in the gym at 7, she's not going to be a kid that complains about it. She'll probably be the first one there. And, you know, she'll be waking everybody else up with energy. So that's a big part of it for me. How it differs from the girls game or any miss, you know, I think it's entirely – it's a culture thing. You know, if kids love working out, regardless of their gender, they're going to be in the weight room. You know, I have a couple kids who absolutely love lifting, who, you know, would be in there every single day if I would let them. You know, on some off days, I have to specifically say, no one's in the gym today, like, because I know kids will be in there lifting and doing extra. And, you know, it might be a week where we just need a lot of rest. And I have to, you know, cut them off from the weight room. And I hurt some feelings when I do it. But I love it. You know, I love that those kids like it that much and that they're that passionate about it, for sure.
Yeah, I think, again, like when I'm working with players here, and especially, you know, players that we have, I think it's, and even speaking to my own girlfriend and understanding kind of the female psyche a little bit more and anything I can do, there is a big, like, the biggest thing I always get is, of course, everyone says it, I'm going to get big. I don't want to be big, muscular. And, you know, if you look at testosterone levels, it's not going to be the case, and all those things. So it's really refreshing. And I think a lot of players need to hear that as well from more coaches. And, you know, this year we had a couple of injuries that were non-contact injuries. And it just comes from, you know, it especially comes to the knees. And it's not from anything that happened on the ice. There is no contact on the ice. And it came from just primarily not being strong enough through the muscles and the knee. Like, you know, at the end of the day, and if you're super tight and you're, you know, you're not focusing on mobility and it's not going to withstand that force, you know, it's a big problem. And especially when you're trying to get recruited, it's a big thing. So whenever coaches can kind of touch on that, because, you know, I was having a conversation recently with a girl, and, you know, we talked about it, and she's going to go in this college this year. And she said to me, she can't do a pull-up. Right. And that's fine. You know, great hockey player, like, she's now starting to work out, but I was more kind of, you know, day one, you come into campus there, you're doing testing, I imagine, right? You're doing off-ice testing, you're doing how much can you lift and all that things. And just from a social aspect, you want to feel that you're, you know, you're able to fit in with that group. And you don't want to feel like on day one where you're a failure. So we're just talking about, like, hey, even if we can't do a lot, let's make sure we'll be able to do something so we're competent in that field. Yeah. So it looks to everyone that we can be, you know, we've been doing this for a few years, right? And that's kind of the most important thing. And, you know, we both know a couple of players. So when we talk about the players with the hardest shot are just the strongest players.
Yeah. Right?
And, you know, in the female game, everyone always says, and I'm sure you're thinking the same thing, you need goal scorers. Right.
Yeah.
And if someone shoots the puck hard, like, even if they miss the net a couple of times, you know, one of them's bound to go in. So,
yeah, we got one of those. She has an absolute bomb of a shot. You know, she's not the prettiest player. She's the best kid on the planet. She crushes it in the weight room, but twice this year we were at UMass once and she crossed the blue line and just absolutely let a bomb go. The goalie didn't even move because she didn't even see it. And then in our championship game versus Norwich too, she picked up the puck in the D zone, and the way she turned, I'm like, oh, like, kid's ready to shoot. She was at the far blue and I'm like, this kid's got it loaded up. And sure as hell, you know, she crosses the red line, takes one step inside their zone and just absolutely lets the laser go. And something you can't teach. You know what I mean? I can't teach kids to have that bomb. Like, that's something from being strong, from being in the weight room to, you know, committing to it. And yeah, she misses a net of practice high and wide a couple of times, but you know, that's her bread and butter, you know, that's her go-to. So it's definitely something that we love from the coaching side of things.
Well, that's such a good point. Like, you know, obviously you live with Amanda Pelkey, right?
Yep.
You know, what do you see from her and why is she able to play at the same level consistently? You know, what is she prepared to do that other players aren't, right? Like, everyone's coming from D1, everyone's the same kind of level, but what is she doing on a daily basis that's allowing herself to still be an Olympian and still do those things that, you know, regardless of where she is or where she's playing, she's still able to make improvements?
Yeah, she is just probably the most committed, determined person I've ever seen, you know, and she's had a lot of people tell her, you can't do it, you're too small, you know, da-da-da. She went to University of Vermont for 4 years and did well. You know, she kind of brought that team to life during her time there, which was awesome. And then post-grad is when she really turned it on. You know, there's kettlebells upstairs in our extra room. There's like a yoga mat. She's done workouts on the roof deck. You know, she is just, you know, she put something on Instagram the other day. I think she was in the snow. She had a coat on and long pants, and she was still, you know, getting a TRX workout in or something like that with her bands. You know, nutrition, constant workouts. You know, even when she took a little bit of a break from the national team, she was going to IPF, which is Institute of Performance and Fitness, I believe. It's north of Boston. It's in Reading. You know, even when she wasn't part of the program, she was there every single day. And for me, like, I love the sport. I love her. But you know, I was like, Mandy, like, why are you working out there still? Like, why are you, you know what I mean? Like, you're not in the program right now. And she goes, it's just routine. It's what I do. And she loves it. You know what I mean? She loves getting better. She loves seeing how far she can push her body post college, post Olympics. And you know, to me, it's amazing because I did not have that. You know, I was committed. I thought I was the most committed player through school, but seeing people like her, like, it's wild. They just have another gear to them that never goes away. And it's something to definitely envy. And you know, I think it's a huge example to kids. And I love that she puts everything on Instagram because, you know, she's got 1,000 little kids that follow her on Instagram, 1,000, you know, college hockey players and high school hockey players. And now that's what sets them apart, and that's what sets her apart, and that's why, you know, she got back on the national team. That's why she made the Olympics, is because she, you know, she kind of put it to me, and I know a lot of the girls say this, they're, you know, the Olympics aren't every 4 years for them, they're every single day, you know what I mean? And that mentality is just like, for me, it's mind-blowing. I'm like, I could not imagine having Olympic mentality 365 days a year. Like, I think I would go nuts, I would explode, but you know, there's something special about her and about that group that they're able to do it. And, you know, it's no days off, and it's literally no days off. And, you know, even if they're not in the gym for a day, they're doing 100 other things to make sure they're good to go for the gym the next day. So, it's just a whole different level of commitment. It's way different than college. It's way different than prep school and club school. But, you know, I think it's 99% of it is mental, to have the ability to show up every day, or, you know, to make your extra room at home a spare gym space, you know, to be that committed to it. So she's just a completely different kind of person, but it's awesome. I'm super, super happy. You know, she went to the Olympics. She did it. She, you know, she got the dream. She had the dream. She achieved it. And, you know, it's definitely a special kind of person. But, you know, I would say, honestly, it's so much of it is mental. Just the love of the gym, the love of the game, you know. So many people drag themselves to the gym. They drag themselves to extra ice on Sunday, and they drag themselves to stick handling clinics and stuff. And you know, a lot of the kids that, yeah, they're there, maybe they'll get a little better, but it's not going to last because they're not enjoying it. They're not having fun. They're not passionate. They're not thrilled to be there. You know, Amanda has a 7 a.m. free skate with a little like 6-year-old, and she is up. She is ready. She's having breakfast. And, you know, I think she's nuts because it's middle of winter and it's dark outside and she's driving for a private lesson, but that's what gets her going. You know, she loves that stuff, and it's obvious, and it translates. And, you know, she's been a huge, huge, you know, just social media presence since the Olympics too, which I think is pretty cool.
Yeah, no, I definitely, like, I follow some of her stuff and just see what she's up to. And just seeing someone like Kessel, she's at the rink sometimes, skate with her now and again,
yeah.
and seeing what she's doing on a daily basis. And, you know, regardless, especially this year when World Championships are canceled, they're still practicing, right? And they're still trying to add layers to their game. So it's great. And it just goes to show that I think with a lot of it, it's a lot of these players obviously are aging out as well. So what's that future look like? And with the advances in technology and the advances in what we know about, you know, hockey and how we're able to train female athletes a little bit better. I think it's going to be even better in the next couple of years. But going back to Suffolk while we finish up here, you know, what are your visions for the program? In 2 years, you already got to the championship. Obviously, next year you want to win it instead of being on this side. But you've got to be pretty happy with the last couple of years of how it's gone. And is there something like, are you looking to, you know, are you speaking to the devices? You've got a great setup. You have your, the girls are treated like rock stars. They've got their own locker room. Locker room looks sick. You know, the equipment is great. You know, the rink is cold. Like, I was freezing.
I was freezing,
but hey, like, that's what you get when you're on the beach in Boston. You know, when I'm talking to players about your program as well, and when they're asking me questions, you know, do you want to be in a city? And you are in the heart of Boston, which is such a great big pool. But you know, what is your vision for this program? Like, obviously next year, win the championship, but is there something, is there a 5-year goal? Is there a 10-year goal? And what are you trying to, what do you want for the players once they leave school?
Yeah. First, just for the vision part, you know, obviously we made, this year was our second year. We had year one last year. This season was year two. We made the championship, you know, didn't win it, but we played awesome. It was a huge learning experience for us. And, you know, we had a team Zoom call yesterday. And one of the things I said to the kids was, you know, on my agenda, I didn't have us in that game until year three. So the fact that we made it year one, that, you know, we finished a little lower in the rankings than we would have liked this year. Just, you know, a couple games didn't go our way that we should have won. But, you know, we won a quarterfinal game on the road. We won a semifinal game on the road to get there. And, you know, that was huge. That was, you know, we kind of found out how tough we were and found out how much we were, you know, what we were made of. You know, and then getting to that game is obviously a huge deal. Didn't go our way. That's okay. You know, looking back on it, I told the kids, you know, I would go and I would lose that game again for the emotions, for the experience, for, you know, we scored first and we've never scored first against, you know, a ranked team or especially a freaking phenomenal team like Norwich. And, you know, I would go back just to feel all those feelings again. And I think the kids agree, regardless of the final score and, you know, them winning. And, you know, you got to watch another team celebrate at the other end of the ice. That's never fun. But, you know, we would go back and do it all again for the experience. So obviously, you know, goal is to win the championship next year. We move to a new conference actually next year, the Commonwealth Coast Conference. So now we play, you know, Endicott and Nichols and Salve and University of New England, Becker, Western New England, who starts a team next season. So it'll be awesome. We're really excited. The goal is to win. You know what I mean? And we had our first Zoom call yesterday with the team and we kind of, I made an itinerary. That's how much free time I have, is that I made an itinerary for a team phone call. But you know, we kind of hit on things we learned from last year and what are we going to do with these to make us a championship team next year. So 1,000% the sights are set on winning that trophy next year. However we get it done, you know, it's just got to happen. That's my expectation. That's the kids' expectation. And we've set it now. So it's real. It's not just a thought in everyone's head. You know, it's something we didn't talk about this year until we got there. You know what I mean? We didn't talk about the championship until it was, you know, we won that semifinal game and it was like, shit, we're going to the championship. So you know, this year we've set it already. It's a goal. It's something to kind of mark on the calendars, if you will. So you know, next year win the championship. Year four obviously is on my first class will be seniors. So, you know, win the championship again, make NCAAs, go a step further than we do next year. You know, the goal is always improvement. And that's kind of what I told the kids is year one, we finished second in the standings. We lost our first playoff game, you know. We were nervous. We were scared. We were a bunch of, you know, we had 17 freshmen year one and, you know, we learned a lot by losing that game. And I think we saw it play out this year with now we showed up and we won playoffs and, you know, we won two playoff games and our freshman goalie got her first shutout, which is awesome. So, yeah, you know, next year we add a couple good kids. You know, we're going to have a lot more depth next year, I think, which is awesome. Just being able to play three lines against top teams is going to be huge for us. And then after that, it's the same thing. It's add good kids every year. It's add top six kids for forwards, top four kids for D every year, and kind of keep, you know, making our first line our second line every season. That's kind of my goal with recruiting. So, you know, we feel the future is wicked bright. We're really excited about it. I think that championship game taught us a lot, you know, and just kind of trying to take that into the future. But the goal 100% is to win a national championship, and how many years away that is, I don't know. Who knows, right? I, you know, like I said, I didn't expect to make the conference championship this year and we did. So, you know, 5 years, maybe national championship, who knows? It'll depend on recruiting and our kids and their motivation and their drive and, you know, their work ethic every day. But it's in the, it's in the calendar somewhere. I'm not exactly sure where it fits, but of course that's the end goal moving forward here.
Yeah, no, I think, and that's great. Like, for anyone that's kind of listening and wants to go to Suffolk and understand, I think, you know, it's very easy to say, I want to play for Boston University and I want to go there and do everything else. But when, with the history of a program like that, whereas your program is new and making the inroads that you already had, it's just such a big change. And it's such like, it's kind of like, you know, it's a splash straight away. And, yeah. And now you're creating that winning culture from the get-go in a different way that's probably different from what you experienced at BC. Whereas BC, I'm right. sure there was a culture where it was in place and things never changed.
Yeah.
The way the systems were played, they stayed the same way. And it was very resistant probably. And they're yeah. probably still to this day. Just, you know, if you're a freshman, there's kind of, you walk into a locker room and you just know exactly how things are done. Where right. I'm sure you're a little bit more open to new ideas and new things and how to adjust. And as hockey, the game changes a lot more, I'm sure you definitely as a player and you were excited by something in a program that gives you an opportunity to develop and change as well with it. Instead of being kind of stuck in the same way, I think that's really refreshing. But one last thing. So I'm a player, say hypothetically, I'm a player. I'm coming into school. I'm an incoming freshman, right? What are you, say there's a few things in the game that you're looking for them to develop. How is that incoming freshman? You know, what do you want that incoming freshman to be doing for now? Like, we look at the off season, and of course everyone's not on the ice right now, and people are on this trying to figure out how do they, with very limited resources, how can they become the best hockey player they can be? You know, what can they be doing at home? What type of workouts? And there's tons of resources out there, but how do you kind of talk about it? Like, I always talk about adding video, watching your clips, and kind of saying three good things you do consistently well, and then three things where you don't. And my opinion is, I see a lot of girls, they rim the puck needlessly and give it away. And it's a habit, because somewhere along the line, when you're 12 or 13 years old, you've had a coach that said, hey, you're defensive, rim the puck, or you're tired or something, and you just rim it, or it's going wide. But I always talk about, even on the boys' side now as well, when you're entering the zone, you don't need to go wide. The defense was giving you so much more gap.
Yeah. Right?
Like, the gap control was in there. They're not going across the blue line. They're not, you know, finishing their checks. And especially on the girl side, that player can't finish their check.
Right.
So, like, there's no need to rim the puck. If you watch the NHL or the top levels, you know, they're only rimming the puck when it's a quick play, when it's really, like, needless, when they're breaking a breakout and trying to go for a stretch.
Yeah.
But 9 times out of 10, it's when that player is getting hit, you know, and they're taking that hit to make the play. So.
Yep.
You know, those are the kind of things I always consistently talk about. But what are something that, you know, what are tools and ways that you talk to players and say, hey, go away, do this, and we're looking forward to seeing you in September?
Yeah, you know, I think it differs a little bit. Like, for instance, we had our team call yesterday. So as a group, you know, I had individual calls with every player and told them individually, you need to get faster, you need to get stronger, you need to get quicker, you need better feet, you got to work on your hands, you got to do this, you know, you got to – chill out with the puck, stop chucking it all over. You know, we had a few of those conversations, as you know, but, you know, in the group chat yesterday, you know, I set out two goals for them that are 100% attainable and 100% easy to do. They're not gym goals. It's, you know, everyone gets in better shape, whether it's, you know, we got to put the weights down for a few minutes. I love that we lift. We have some kids who are so freaking strong. They could probably break me in half, but I said, we got to get a little bit quicker, a little more explosive, just overall in better shape as a team. And that's as a team, you know, I'm not saying every individual, but overall as a group, and then everyone's got to work on their hands. I said, everybody's got hockey gloves at home, grab a golf ball, grab a tennis ball, whatever you have to stick handle with. If you need a golf ball, I can mail you one, you know, it's a tiny little thing, but you know, there is no reason that we can't fix those two things while we're at home. You know, that's very, very attainable. I wanted to make it easy for them in a sense that, you know, there's no excuses, not that I would get any from this group, but you know, it's easy. You can do it at home. You can do it at your own speed. I said, stick handle 10 minutes a day. If you have a dog, stick handle with your dog. It's wicked funny to watch them chase the ball around. So, you know, that's more of the group conversation of these are team goals that I expect everyone to be better at in the fall. With recruits, it would be a case-by-case basis. You know, I'll send them the itinerary from our first call and be like, look, this is our goals for the summer. These are our expectations. In May, when classes end and school's officially out, online school, obviously, we will send our players a workout packet for the summer. You know, we're not going to do it now. Mm-hmm. Gyms are closed. You know, some kids have gyms in their house. Some kids don't. It just gets a little bit messy. And with school being online, You know, it's just a huge investment period right now. So we made the decision to wait till May 15th or 16th. We're going to send it out. So that will go to the incoming players too, which I think is really important. Just, you know, whatever we're testing in the fall, they'll be made aware of. But as far as improvements, expectations for incoming players, that's case by case. You know, I got a forward who's great, who just needs, you know, she's got the best speed in the world. We're going to fix her hands a tiny bit this summer. You know, I got a D coming in who is solid, the most solid D you ever have. You know, she's got to fix her angles a tiny bit. You know what I mean? So it's very case by case. We'll give them the generic team-oriented goals, but as individuals, I think, you know, you can't just give them one blanket sheet of expectations and be like, everyone gets better at all these things. You know, I like to give them one or two things to put all their effort into, all their focus into. I did that with the, you know, the returners on the phone too, just so they know exactly what the expectation is. And if it's one or two things, it's easy. It's attainable. It's, you know, it's not 17 different things that they have to split their days up. And, you know, once a week they're doing this and once a week they're doing that. You know, if it's two things, those are two things they can do every single day to get better. So, we can try to make it as easy and accessible as possible over the summer.
Yeah. All right. So Taylor, appreciate your time. But if I'm a player trying to reach out to you, how's the best way to contact you?
Anyway, I am a millennial, so I'm always on my phone, call, email, text.
DMs?
Pardon?
DMs.
I haven't gotten any of those yet.
Wow, I'm surprised.
I get the occasional follow on Instagram. You know, a lot of the kids will follow our team. A couple of them will follow me, which I'm like, okay, I like that, cool. But you know, anyway, kids want to reach out, express their interest, you know, email, phone, text. You know, I have a lot of respect for a kid who can pick up the phone and make a phone call. I think in today's world, that's wild. You know, I sent an email to a girl 2 weeks ago now, and, you know, she didn't respond to it. She picked up the phone and called me, and I was like, oh my God, you are the first kid to do this in years. You know what I mean? To me, yeah. I was like, this is a wicked mature kid. Like, I wasn't even ready to talk to her. I was like, you're more prepared than me. So, you know, if reaching out, I think they're already taking a really good first step. So how they do it is completely up to them.
Cool. Well, actually, real quick question. So I've had this kind of conversation with someone recently, and they set up an Instagram account for their hockey. Kind of weird, right? Like she's a 16-year-old kid, and she set up an Instagram account for hockey. And you know, I was just kind of talking to her, and I was just like, well, how does this look as a coach, right? It's great that you want to post like all these things and like, but like you've got to be a person first.
Right? Yeah.
So if I'm a coach, I like to look at, you know, whenever I follow a lot of our players here and obviously players that we both know as well from Europe and everything else. And I can kind of get an adjustment. And when I look at their feed, I kind of know what I'm expecting when I talk to them.
100%.
I know what they're like. So, So what is your thought? Like I know I understand the kind of the thought process behind that some of these people do. But again, as a coach personally myself, I don't want to see just hockey, right? I want to see what this person is away from their rink. I want to see, you know, what their focus is. If 99% of the pictures are beach pictures, you know, I'm a little bit like, well,
probably not in the gym a lot.
Yeah, like how is hockey, right? Like or if like, you know, you can kind of tell from someone's social media what type of person they are, and if they're a leader or they're a follower, if they got some bit of humor about themselves,
100%. Or
if they're a family person. Can you just touch on that before we wrap up here?
Yeah, I didn't really think about that, to be honest with you. You know, I don't get a lot of the hockey specific things. I've seen a couple, you know, just younger kids, 13, 14, 15, who are doing it. You know, I wonder if that's them or if that's mom and dad, to be honest with you, doing it. Right? Someone's holding the camera when they're doing all those stick handles, so it's probably mom or dad. But like you said, you know, we want people, we want good people, we want good students, we want good athletes. You know, it's not all hockey. And I think that's where kids get a little crazy, is that, you know, they're so passionate, they're so involved. I love that they want to make that profile, but they don't need to. You know, they can make a highlight video, they can post things about hockey 100%. But like you said, you know, to see a kid who is a normal person, who has friends, who, you know, isn't just in their basement stick handling 13 hours a day, you know, I think that's pretty normal. And that would be definitely something, like you said, you know, if it's all beach pictures, if it's all shopping pictures, it's probably, you know, if they're not passionate enough to be involved with hockey on social media, that's a little weird. But, you know, I think there's definitely a balance. There's kind of a middle ground of, you know, just kind of being a normal person, if you will.
I 100%. And I think it's becoming more and more a thing. I'm seeing a lot more parents, and it's quite frightening to be someone to, you know.
Yeah.
It's I'm seeing it like young as 9, 10 years old.
Mom and dad gotta cool it.
Yeah, doing giveaways on Instagram, and it's a little bit, you know, where is the line there? And it's also, you know, and I think a lot of people like USA Hockey talk about multi-sport athletes, and I think that, for my purpose, you know, my opinion on that is like, yes, that's fine until the age of 12, 13, but multi-sport athlete as well also means that, hey, in the wintertime you're playing hockey, then take some time off to play lacrosse or field hockey. There shouldn't, right. The two sports can't really overlap at any given time because you're not giving yourself the rest or recovery. So it's also difficult for a lot of people to try and be everything. And sometimes I just say to players like, hey, you know, just go all in on something. What's the worst thing that can happen? And if you're already committed to hockey and not trying to be the prom queen or trying to be, you know, the coolest, the most popular person or trying to fit in or go to every single party, like you're going to make some sacrifices, but if it's something you really, really want, then don't be afraid to go after it. So yeah, that's kind of it, I think, Taylor. I'm sure we'll talk more, or maybe if this goes well, if people like it, if people like your headband,
you'll want me back. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe we'll get Louisa on it. Maybe we'll get Amanda.
Bring the dog in next time too.
I got my dog. He's kind of chilling over there right now.
I locked mine out because he would be all over the computer if he was in here.
But again, yeah. So like I'll slip it in the link notes here or whatever way we put this on, how people can reach out to you and how they can, you know, definitely reach out to Suffolk. Like in my opinion, Suffolk's one of probably the best programs out there right now.
Thank you.
You know, just looking for the development, right? And looking for how can players keep growing. And
100%.
You're in the best place as well. You're in the heart of Boston. So you can fly in anywhere. You can go home pretty easy. There's Amtrak. There's buses. There's goers everywhere. You know, as a place, it's pretty cool. It's pretty unique. It's very similar to New York, but a little bit more, you know.
Not as crazy as New York. Not nearly as crazy.
It's like England a little bit for me, so it's nice. And the hockey is great. Like even if you're not playing hockey and you know, you say you got a weekend off, there's so much to see, there's so much to do. You can be watching an off-season game, or you can watch Alina Mueller tear it up. You can go even down to like Holy Cross, you can go up to Harvard, you know, you go to BU. There's so much going on that's just like, just from a hockey standpoint, it's amazing. And I think from a playing standpoint, it'd be the best place to play. The snow as well. You got the Frog Pond and Boston Commons and outdoor skating and wherever it is. I think it's a really, really interesting place, and you're in a hotbed apart from your rinks freezing cold, but players will just have to buy some new UGG boots or something.
We skate hard, so we don't really feel the cold.
Well, especially on Mondays. All right. Well, I'm going to get a bigger jacket, but yeah, thanks Taylor. And
thank you, Sam. Appreciate it.
All right. That went well, I think.
Yeah. Good job.
I don't know, like it's still recording, but I'll cut this.
That's all right.
Yeah. So I don't know, like how long was it? Like an hour, like 45 minutes? What time is it?
Yeah. Like 50.
All right. I'll edit it and then it went well. All right.
Perfect.
Thank you. Good stuff. See ya.
Let me know if you need me. All right, bye Sam. Thanks. Bye-bye.
So I think that podcast went really, really well. You know, a lot of takeaway for a lot of young players, and I think what Taylor is able to bring to the table there is really, really good. So if you want to follow her or shoot her an email, just find her email. I'll put it in the link below. And we'll keep us going. We've got a couple more lined up coming in now in the next day or so. So, you know, follow her along. I don't know where we're going to put this yet. If it's on Spotify or it's on podcast. Or, you know, I know I'm going to put it on social media in some way as well. And then if anything else, you can follow along at chimahockey.com. Appreciate everything. And again, leave any comments or questions you have for her, and maybe we'll do a Q&A. Cheers. Bye.